Yeah, such a topic. The modern age. The modern age is an artificial world, as we all know. A world where our lifestyle is far removed from nature, in a sense, and in that way also from our own nature. And I'm speaking purely on the material platform at the moment. Yeah. So anything you do in the modern world is kind of... how do you juggle it all, right? You know, like with an earphone in your ear and with, like, you know, a phone sort of vibrating in your pocket during a lecture, with just the world becoming a global village, with flying here and there, with communicating, so many things. And with it, a production consumption society where there's a pace of life. Maybe not so high in Cape Town, but definitely in Joburg, where things are moving and where a lot of people wind up after graduation because there is the money, and so on. So meditation, yeah. What is it really? Considering everything in the modern age, is it connecting with our roots, connecting with ourselves, connecting with, like, a part of us that's sort of not really so much part of our life anymore? And how far does that go? Is it then just a psychological thing where you dig a little deeper and sort of become more aware of subconscious desires, subconscious needs? Is that what meditation is? For some it is. But that kind of meditation is another material technique that can bring some add to some peace of mind, add to some increased focus, diminished stress, and all these things. And sometimes they ask me to speak on topics like that, you know, how to get rid of stress and all that. And I mean, to be honest, I didn't get rid of stress. My life is pretty stressful. Yeah, you think I was just described as a globetrotter, you think that's not stressful? I mean, yeah. I mean, sometimes I'm permanently fixed in this pose, you know, from the airline chair, right? And I walk like that for days. I can't say. It's definitely stress. Isn't the whole world designed around stress? What do you think, that the caveman had no stress? Some dinosaur peeks in the cave. I mean, it's pretty stressful to me, yeah. Don't you think that the whole world sort of has an element of stress in it? Doesn't matter where you live. Farming, you know, very stressful. Will the rain come? Will the rain not come? Will the insects this year again eat the crop, or will they stay away? Stress, stress, stress. You can think of lots of things. So what is meditation really doing for us? That is the question. So before I put it in a modern context, there are all kinds of levels of meditation. Then you can look at traditions. Say, we're looking at the topic of meditation now from traditional perspectives. Different countries have used different techniques. In Mexico is well known for its meditation on mushrooms. Colombia has again another variety of things that help the meditation. So there are many things, many ways, and I'm from Amsterdam and there is another type. So plenty of varieties of artificial means to help the meditation in the world. So really, what do you want? I had some friends. They became involved with a particular yogi from India who taught them a type of meditation where they learned to levitate. And they were able to levitate as much as 30 centimeters and then sort of boom, drop back down. And he said they went quite deep into it. And one day, they became the teachers. And a whole group of teachers once had a meditation all together on a giant strawberry. And at the end, they could taste it. Well, such things are absolutely, I guess it's an experience, not really, the big strawberry and tasting it. I also, in my early days, went to India. Long journey, overland, with the idea to look for a spiritual experience. And, I sat down on the bank of the Ganges, the holy river. And there was a sitting on earth, water, fire, air eater, it was all there. I sat down and in deep meditation in the evening, and then I heard this ringing sound in my ears. Was it a spiritual experience? No, it wasn't. Mosquitoes, millions of them, everywhere, all over the place. I mean, bloodthirsty mosquitoes. Well, I tell you, that was the end of my meditation for that night. Jeez. The next day, I tried again, and I sat down on the bank of the same Ganges, but this time in the day, and the sun was burning on me, but I was determined. I will sit here, so the sun goes down and those mosquitoes come back. And I sat and looked at one point in the water, and about, half an hour, something like that, suddenly a dolphin jumped right out of the spot, where I was looking. Wow, I'm a yogi, mystic powers, dolphins jump out of my meditation spot. I was over the moon. Although the next morning I thought, okay, but what does it mean? What am I to make of this? A fish is just a fish. So here I was with all my... So what was the aim of this meditation? Was it to get mystic power? I read books of Tibetan Buddhists who in their meditation would make the murals come off the walls. And the murals started, these Tibetans, they have all these different shapes and forms that they see in their mandalas, and they paint all these figures, and all the figures started dancing around the room. Is that meditation? Is that when you break through? So what when we take meditation to another level? Whatever it may be, one thing is clear, then it deals with another realm of consciousness, another realm of perception. No longer are we dealing here with this world where the meditation helps us to pass an exam. Since I meditate, I perform 20% better. Oh, yes, there you go. No, that's in this realm. But when you start to get figures that float around the room, you're definitely somewhere else, possibly on cloud nine, I'm not sure where, but somewhere. So that's all right. So meditation can also take us beyond the present dimension to the experience of another dimension. And that can go, But is mystic power, is that in another dimension? Is that really, it's another dimension definitely than my everyday life. In my everyday life, no mystic power. Things don't float around the room. I have to, get up and pick them up and put them down. But still, no mystic power can reach the spiritual platform or the spiritual dimension. Mystic power is a more subtle form of material manipulation. Because the focus of it is still material, you see. You use, whether you open the door with your hand or whether you open the door with your mind, you're opening the door. So, therefore, the meditation is the door. You see the point? It's the same focus. So, mystic power in itself is not changing the focus. It's just a technique, a different technique to get things done. So it's the focus, really, the focus that makes the difference in meditation. Not the technique, and not even, some sort of side effects like levitating or mystic experiences, or dolphins jumping from a point in the water. That I realized at that point. So now, where to take it? So the spiritual platform, the spiritual platform is something that's not of this world. That's obvious. When you're looking at the spiritual platform, you can approach that from different angles. You can look within through introspection, and you can look at the spirit within and sort of try to perceive, and you get maybe somewhere. As I said, some took drugs, like in history there's Rinpoche, right? Rinpoche is the example of one who was trying to get a mystic experience through drugs. But whatever it may be, if you look around the world, sooner or later, when it comes to spirit, then the word soul comes in, and when in Sanskrit, atma, mind, body, and spirit, you know about that. The word atma refers to the self. Atma means the self. It is self. What is the self? Is the self the body? Is the self the mind? Is the self the spirit? What is it? Well, the body, how long have you got it? It's like me, I've got this one. Well, not exactly the same, it's sort of changed, but kind of, still blue eyes and still sort of blondish hair, although it's fading. I've got it now for 61 years, Here it is. Gee whiz, it's definitely changing. Things start bulging and sagging, and teeth are disappearing, and eyesight is getting bad. And slowly, memory lane is somewhere where I haven't been for a long time. What was that again? So what can I say? What will my meditation be at 88? Are you okay? Did you brush your teeth? And then I take them out and say, no. Then they take them to the tap and give them a brush, Oh gosh, I'm looking forward to those days. It's getting closer. So what is meditation? I saw this man with a t-shirt that said, seen it all, heard it all, done it all, but can't remember it all. Oh dear. No. No, but back to the soul. Mind, body, words, or mind, body, soul. There is Atma, the self. So the self exists on all these levels, but the self as the body is changing, and after then one day it's going to be over. So then this one's finished. But there's existence beyond that. So say traditional sources. If modern man believes it or not, that's hard to say, because modern man has to verify everything for himself. You know what I mean? Can't accept anything from authority. Investigate the arguments and make up your own mind. Yeah. Then you know for sure that you don't know anything for sure. Right? You know? That's kind of the modern world. You know for sure that you don't know anything for sure, and there's a lot of insecurity. And you carry that with you in your meditation. So where it's all going to go, I don't know. But anyway, whereas in more traditional culture, life is clear. Right? The truth is set. The goal is clear. It's known. Yes, what it is. Right? No doubt about it. Fixed, you know. So meditation becomes a clear means in a traditional world, in a traditional society. It becomes clearly a process that others have gone, that you also can go now, and, you know, and the goal is clearly here. Yeah. And, okay, usually a religious goal, and then, yeah. And of course, yeah, and some people think every religion or every form of spirituality has its own God concept, right? And that may be, there may be that every tradition has its own God, its own concept, but not that every tradition has its own God, right? They have the same one, they just look at different features at times. That seems to be contradictory, but that is only from different cultural perceptions. Mm. So yeah, modern man, when modern man leaves tradition altogether, then modern man winds up without any anything to hold on to. What do you believe? Science. I mean, but science, you know, like there's a philosopher of science, well known, named Karl Popper, right, who just made that one statement. He said that if science is meant to determine the truth, then all we can say is that so far it hasn't been the case. Right? Because each time every idea is changed for a new one after some times. Something stands for a while and then someone comes and knocks it over. Alright, so that wasn't the truth either. So if science is our source of truth, then where do we stand? Uncertain ground. So we can see that meditation requires a foundation in a conviction for it to be focused. If it has no foundation in any conviction, then where will it go? And then it's just sort of the mind is like a cloud that blows with the wind. And you go here and there and everywhere. Okay. But to blindly buy into a tradition seems also like really, very difficult to swallow in a modern age, because to blindly buy into a tradition means that, you know, someone becomes a believer. When someone becomes a believer, at that stage, they've lost the intellectual freedom, to just, you know, make up their own mind based on their own perceptions, their own experiences, and so on. It's just like, it looks like somebody become like a little dead, you know, not like a living person anymore, for whom life is an adventure. And that's the beauty of modern times, where everyone is like, going that route of exploring for yourself. Of course, on the other side of the coin, one might say, with all that exploring, it's usually the same old thing. What was that called again? The road less traveled. Remember that? You know that psychology book, the self-help book, the road less traveled. It's quite kind of well known. I saw a cartoon of it. You know, like the cartoon showed an enormous traffic jam. You know, the road less traveled. Right? It's basically the road of self-help psychology. You know, the road less traveled. It showed like an incredible traffic jam because everyone goes that way, right? Self-help psychology. That was a good cartoon. I liked it. Yeah. So, where am I going? I'm sort of wearing my modern man glasses, as you noticed. Therefore, my focus has not been extremely strong in this presentation because I haven't accepted in my presentation anything as fact. Yeah. I sort of kept it extremely open. I've explored that a bit and said without a foundation, it's difficult to have focus. Very difficult. It's difficult to have directed meditation. Any kind of open sort of form, open meditation. Like I have a friend who writes in that way, and he just sits down and he writes, and whatever sort of bubbles up, he writes it down. And he tries to switch off the intelligence and intuitive writing and just let it all come. And, you know, and whether it makes sense or not, just words and, you know, even grunts or whatever comes up, sometimes a phrase. And then in the end, he sort of edits it and makes it into something. Yeah. Okay, one can meditate like that. It's like music without any structure. Yeah. Just any tone will do, any beat will do. There is, the jazz festivals coming up, and you get that totally free jazz making any sound. It's okay, but I don't know. It's... So as you like. I've spoken about that now. Now I'm going for a moment a bit to some traditional approach. And as I said, in traditions there is a process, there is a clear goal. Traditional cultures were all religious. Right? We only have sort of put that on the shelf for how long? Second World War, kind of. First World War, somewhere there. Around the World Wars, and maybe in South Africa, even a little later for many people. So, religion has been, and maybe still is for many people, prominent, but in traditional cultures, always was always part of life, yeah, completely. And so when modern culture came, we kind of got rid of that. So, traditions. I've read a bit about many traditions. And in traditions, in religious traditions, what interests me is one common factor, and that is saints. Right? There's a lot written about saints, and every tradition has its saints. And so when you speak about spiritual tradition, I think to approach it from the angle of saints is safe ground. Stay away from religious conflict and speak about saints. One saint in one tradition in the morning came out of the house and was carrying a bucket with fire and a bucket with water. People said, "Oh, what you're going to do with all of that?" And the person said, saint said, with the water, I will put out the fire of hell. And with the fire, I will burn heaven. You're gonna burn heaven? You're gonna put out the fire of hell? What is this? Yes, the saint said, because most people are into spirituality, either because they want to avoid hell or because they want to attain heaven, where they enjoy eternity. Instead of being in it for the love of God. So that, I thought, was a nice statement. Right? And if I look cross-cultural at the saints who represent their traditions and who are meant to have realized something through their meditation, then you see in these saints certain characteristics as a result of their process, their meditation. These saints, they have an inner strength. They are not disturbed by any outside factors. Internally, they are unaffected. These saints hold love in the highest esteem. These saints are aiming to dedicate their life to God, and at the same time they are dedicating their life to benefiting all the living beings. So they are well-wishers, really. That's sort of a saint. And I think that we can see in every tradition. So that is, if you summarize, because I'm summarizing in a short talk like this, the result of traditional meditation is basically that, sainthood, saintliness. Yes. Well, that's something that interests me. Imagine a modern saint. That would be something, right? Imagine if people would become saintly through their meditation. Imagine we have a few saints in a university. Imagine we even have a faculty for sainthood. That sounds pretty cool. Yeah. I think the university would benefit from such a faculty, absolutely. Whether you would get a job, I don't know. Saints are known to be unemployed these days. What can be said? There's a lot of unemployment among saints in the modern world, but, you can be optimistic, right? Because saints, somehow or other, even although they may not find a job, somehow or other, it seems that they have a little angel that takes care of them. So in that way, in the end, you might wind up all right if you get a degree in sainthood. Well, that's really what we are speaking about and proposing, a means to attain sainthood. Meditation. All right. So I saw a Japanese Zen monk, one of those with the lampshade head, and sort of walking through the streets of Tokyo very slowly from the heel to the toe, every 30 seconds ringing a bell. Ding. It looked a little out of touch. He looked so otherworldly. It looked like he was not seeing anyone, totally absorbed, oblivious. How can anyone be like that? Didn't look like a role model. The problem is that, can you practice some spiritual meditation and at the same time be a normal person? That would be the best. Yeah. After all, it's hard to be different, really, really. I mean, you know, a different shade is one thing, but to be completely different, you know, you disconnect yourself from everything and everyone. So does meditation require that you go live in a cave, that you go to a forest, that you wear a lampshade on your head? Does meditation require that you just cut yourself off from the rest of the world? There are different techniques. Some are doing that. We are here today to introduce to you the process of mantra meditation. Yay! It's good because it goes together with music, and music is sort of easy. It comes natural. Anybody can partake, right? The age is no barrier, you know. The little kiddies or the old folks, anybody can partake. That's the nice thing. Music is part of us. So a process that comes natural may be easier in this age than going into the forest. I mean, I wouldn't know what to do in the forest, to be honest. What do you eat in the forest? You know what I'm saying? What do you do at lunchtime in the forest? I mean, the forest is nice, but lunchtime in the forest, I wouldn't know what to eat, no, really, honestly. You know, they used to send us from school into the forest with one of those books, and then you have to find the plants. And I always had the problem. I saw the plant and the picture in the book, and, you know, and they look different, you know what I mean? And I go, like, is this really the one, or is this not the one? Oh, gosh. I would starve in the forest. So what to do? Okay, so mantra meditation is all about using what is natural, staying in the world and using the things of the world. Because after all, the world in itself, things are neither good or bad. A knife is not good nor bad. Depends what you do with it. Right? Depends how you use it. So the world is, it's not to be rejected. Depends how we use it. So mantra meditation is good for the modern age because it's natural. Mantra is spiritual sound which frees the mind, and that's a traditional technique which we now apply in modern life, and it works. Through it, one can attain sainthood, even in the middle of a shopping mall. And the good thing about it is you don't need to wear a colorful dress. Of course, if you like colorful dresses, then you can. Like, I kind of, I'm from Holland, we like orange, you know. It's our national color. So I came here in the national uniform today. But it's a fact. It can be done in anywhere. Like you can look at Hare Krishna, and if you want to, you can check the West, you can check the web, and you can read about Krishna West, which is like the latest trends. Krishna West is there for you. So mantra meditation can be done anywhere and everywhere. Now what I'll do is, it's your turn, and then just we'll take questions maybe for 7 minutes or so, and then we'll do 7 minutes of the mantra on the way out. That's the plan of action. So any comments so far? Yeah?
I read a few years ago in a Buddhist
temple. Okay, a little louder. I'm really deaf, actually.
I read a few years ago in a Buddhist text that one can achieve enlightenment by peeling a potato if your focus is on the right thing.
Yes.
And that got me thinking, like, that's something like everyday. It's often something that makes people bored, but it can be turned into something useful.
Sure.
So could you maybe give us some advice on how to find other things like that?
Well, the thing is this, you know, like when you use the example of peeling the potato, it's basically an ordinary mundane activity. So to translate what you, the example you gave into a principle, is one can take ordinary mundane things and do them in a meditative way, and if one can find the right focus. However, it's hard to find the focus. That from my talk I sort of indicated, you know. And so that's why most of us, although we peel potatoes and do all the other, and brush teeth and do all the other ordinary mundane things, do not manage to transform it into a process where we get another level of consciousness or experience. We just stay, you know, I just get blisters on my hands and black grooves from peeling these potatoes, but it doesn't go any further. And, you know, if I get an alteration of consciousness, then after a while I get fried with potatoes. Too many potatoes. I have managed to attain that state of consciousness, but not anything else. Potato. So it's difficult. That's the point. So I agree with whoever said that it can be done, but then do it. Not easy. So maybe somewhat impractical. Theoretically, interesting. Interesting, but didn't work for me. Didn't work for me. Yeah. Point well taken. Anyone else? Yes?
In terms of reaching consciousness or reaching a higher level of enlightenment,
yes,
how do you know that you actually reach such a state? Because with me, I've been practicing meditation for like 7 years.
Yeah.
And there's never been a point where I felt as if I've reached a point. It was just an inexplicable state for me,
uh-huh,
in terms of focus, uh-huh, in terms of my ability to understand, etc. So how do you know that you've actually reached such,
mm-hmm,
a state?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, you know, I used to, I started out with meditation through music. I made my own music, and I was looking for something sacred in music. And you know, I was making music, and it did something for me. I mean, just trying to make sacred music gave me strength to sort of leave some lower qualities and to hold on to higher ideals. So it gave me strength. It nourished me, but it never tipped the balance. It never brought me to the point of fully of enlightenment. So at one point I thought, yeah, I'm getting stuck with this. And so then I began to look at traditions. That's when I stopped looking at more. That's when I stopped experimenting, looked at traditions, and then at one point, okay, I decided to follow this traditional process as an experiment. Now, the advantage of a traditional process is that, besides the meditation, there are scriptures or books that go with it that explain the process and the alterations of consciousness you get on the way. So you can sort of test it. So according to scriptures, it says that as you go deeper into the spiritual aspect in your meditation, it must show in that your material desires, your desires in relation to material things, must go down. They must diminish. So lust, greed, anger, envy, and these kind of things have to go down. They have to diminish. And so that's one way, according to ancient texts, that you can measure a deeper level of absorption on the spiritual side when the material side goes down. At the same time, on the spiritual side, there is there's experience, you know. There's experience of a higher reality. Yes. If you come on a religious plane, it's not just, you know, someone on the knees praying, but there is two-way traffic. There's two-way traffic. For the saintly person, there is two-way traffic. There's experience. It's not only, you know, Carl Jung, the psychologist, he was known to be a very kind of religious man. So one day an interviewer asked him, said, "Mr. Jung, do you believe in God?" And Jung said, "No." So, you know, I was like shocked, you know, how can Jung say this? And then the interviewer was quiet, 10 seconds. Then Jung says, "I know that God exists." That had power, you know. And that was his point. It's not just belief, it's experience. It's experience. So there is reciprocation. Yeah. So from that experience, one begins to know. Or sometimes they say, first you begin to see a spiritual plan everywhere. And, you know, begin to see the hand, the divine hand. Then you may get face to face with the divine. One who gets face to face with the divine is, of course, not from this world anymore. He's here, but there at the same time. Such a person is the most potent saint. Yeah. So different degrees of saintlyhood are also there. Yeah. But I think what I tried to establish earlier on, that the result of real meditation is saintlyhood. Yeah. And that was the common denominator, you know what I mean? Going across cultural boundaries.
You spoke about the saints of different religions, right?
Yeah.
So, given, like, if you look at Christians, their saint is Jesus.
One of them.
One.
Saint Francis, so many saints.
But my question is, is it possible to prophesize him through meditation?
Yeah, why not? You know, like, once you get on another level, you also get access to other knowledge. Yeah. So on that spiritual level, there is another level of emotional experience, another level of thinking, feeling, and willing. So it's not only another experience of another sentiment, but also some access to other information is also there.
So in reaching the celestial wireless, is it possible to see beyond the fusion?
Yeah, I mean, there are many sages who have been able in the past, right, to predict and foretell the future.
Nostradamus.
Huh?
Nostradamus.
Yeah. So many personalities have been able to foresee, foretell the future, right, through saintly qualities. I mean, mystic powers can also be attained through dark ritual, right? They are also described. Witchcraft is not just imagination. There is something to it. Yeah, yeah. That's also going on everywhere in the world, like in Russia, like in, you know, anywhere in your backyard, on the cemeteries.
I remember a situation when I was a kid, and
yeah.
There was a boy I was in class with. He technically died for like 5 minutes. When we talk about the physical speed.
Yeah.
Now, I always wondered, is it possible to extract, well, it's always possible, right, to extract your spirit and then leave the body.
Yeah, the spirits leave bodies, so many out-of-body experiences. I've had some myself, had a big accident, was in a hospital, saw myself lying on the bed, went through the wall, went around the hospital, and it's clearly existing separate from the body.
How did you come back?
Well, shall I tell you the truth? I was in the hospital, saw myself lying there, said, where am I? I said, let's have a look outside. I went outside, I looked, and I recognized the hospital. Next moment I saw a car coming, I said, hey, that's our car. I saw my friend sitting in the car, and I thought, geez, they must be coming for me. But I'm not home. I better go back. I'm a practical person. Okay, we've got 5 minutes left for my mantra meditation, which I definitely want to do to close the whole program.